of soil properties and management effects. Welcome, Candice.
Thank you. Good morning. Today, I will be discussing the soil survey, dynamic soil property projects, and how we go about sampling or evaluating impacts of management on soil properties. So a little background on U.S. Soil Survey. We have been around for a long time, and we hold a wealth of information on inherent soil properties. And as you know, inherent soil properties go back to our five soil-forming factors for an entire soil profile. And the way Soil Survey historically has gathered information, we've gathered it based on land use. So if you ever access our databases through Web Soil Survey or some other means, what you will know is that it's either agriculture or forest, and you might find that it might be military lands. But that's as much information that it would provide. What we do with the information is that we inventory that information and we provide interpretations. As well, with increased knowledge of soils and application of soil information, it requires new ways to communicate what we know about mapped soils. And it requires that we begin collecting management data beyond just land use. So why do we care? Well, the big topic is health, soil health. And that is the capacity of the soil to function as a vital living ecosystem that sustains plants, animals, and humans. So it's a capacity to function, whether it's for nutrient cycling, infiltration, water availability, filtering and buffering, the physical stability of the soils and support, provide support, as well as habitat for biodiversity. So we at Soil Survey, we can evaluate the capacity of soil to function by evaluating impacts of land management practices on soil properties that change at the human time scale as a result of disturbance. And I'll refer to that from this point on as dynamic soil properties. Those properties that can change within a human time scale based off of different management. So while changes in dynamic soil properties have been traditionally measured via long-term studies and monitoring, the potential changes in dynamic soil properties are being estimated by a U.S. Soil Survey by careful space-for-time substitution, where we're comparing land use or management conditions on the same soils, or you might be familiar with the soil series. And we follow the guidelines of our soil change guide, which can be found on our website. So space for time, it's basically a comparison study. We can measure DSPs for two or more management systems, state phases, also it's referred to, at or near steady state conditions. That means that we know that it's been in those practices for a significant amount of time. And we can interpret how those changes departure from inherent or reference conditions and how that affects soil function, resilience, and sustainability. So we do this through our what we call DSP or dynamic soil property studies. And so depending on where you're coming from, whether you're coming at it from as an ecological site inventory or you're interested in a particular soils because it has great extent or you're particularly interested in a management, some of the questions you would need to know would be what are your set of soils or map units or is it going to be on a drummer soil series? Is it going to be on a Tipton soil series? You also want to know some information about your study area. And it could be that in some of our studies that there have been questions about a particular watershed or certain study area that began or spawned the design of a DSP study. But with that design, you have two or more management conditions within that map unit. So, for example, if you took the drummer soil series, what we're looking for is a reference condition, and that could be a rangeland or prairie grassland, and then two alternate management scenarios where that's corn that's no-tilled or corn with conventional tillage within that same map unit. And then we look for two or more sites per management condition because we're interested being able to scale it up to look at statistical variability. And so we're looking at for those sites and properties at multiple places. we do is we sample a pedon, we dig soil pits or collect cores, and as you've seen before, we have a central pedon, which is fully described and sampled to 150 centimeters, first by 0 to 5 centimeters and then by horizon, so that we're able to correlate it back to soil survey standard practices. We then choose 3 to 6 additional satellite pedons, and we sample those down to 50 centimeters. So the criteria that we use for dynamic soil properties is that it has to be sensitive to management. It clearly represents soil function, and it's relatively insensitive to environmental changes, and it's easy to measure. So we can repeat the study, repeat the analyses, and then it must be accurate. And of course, the cost must be low. So these are not an exhaustive list of properties. We do have a minimum data set, but at our DSP studies, we sample and analyze things for physical, chemical, and biological parameters. So what I'm going to do is go through some examples of some DSP studies. One is the Amarillo, and the other is the Kirkland, their soil series. A little bit about the Amarillo soil series. It's mainly consists of alpha soils, and it's considered a benchmark soil because it has great extent. You can find this particular soil series. It covers over 3.3 million acres across New Mexico and Texas. It's well-drained, very deep. And it's mainly cultivated with cotton, grain, sorghum, and wheat, but also can be used as native rangeland, short and mid-grasses, and, of course, wildlife habitat. The Kirkland soil series are mollisols, and they represent a little over 651,000 acres, and expands across central Oklahoma and south-central Kansas. These are very deep, well-drained soils. And they're mainly cultivated with grain, sorghum, and cotton, and in some areas are used for pasture or rangeland. So for the next few slides, I want to talk about some of the dynamics properties that we've measured, looking at putting both soil series side by side, not to compare the soil series because they're located in different regions, but to show you why it is that we're interested in evaluating management practices on these properties. The first one is aggregate stability, and as you're well aware, that kind of gives us an idea of the erodibility impact that's of soil. And for the Amarillo, both the Amarillo and the Kirkland soil series, we find that the percent aggregates are greatest under rangeland. And so in this case, that's our reference site. The other two sites, this for Amarillo, the CRP and conventional till cotton. For the Kirkland, no-till and conventional till. Where we see differences in the Amarillo soil series between the different managements, we definitely see differences in rangeland versus no-till and conventional till. But like this site, with all of our sites, we're not seeing big differences in aggregate stability or any DSP parameters between no-till and conventional tillage. This one is bulk density. We see that on our reference site, rangeland, we see that bulk density is a little bit lower. Looking at carbon, this is actually presented as total carbon in both series. We see that in our range Latin sites, our reference, that carbon is the greatest. You see definite differences within the Amarillo soil series. And again, I should mention that I'm only showing the data from the 0 to 5 centimeter layer. So a little overview. We are seeing, just not at these sites, but overall for our entire DSP data set, that we're seeing observed differences at the 0 to 5 centimeter depth with between management scenarios. A horizon, we are seeing some differences, but they're not as significant when just looking at 0 to 5. And when we're looking at the entire pedon, all horizons, we see that differences between management scenarios are observed mostly just in the A horizon. And there are not that many differences between conventional and no-till. So, again, soil survey, we're in the business of inventorying information and making interpretations. So one of the things that we're interested with these DSP studies is being able to see, you know, take the knowledge of different systems and see if they can be used to predict change under different conditions. So the questions that we're interested in are, what is the condition of the soil? If the soil is degraded, can it be restored? If so, how long will it take? What land uses are at risk for irreversible change? And how will soil changes impact future management options? And so because we're implementing the space for time, that means we know a little bit about the management history. So if we could ask questions that if, you know, we change conventional to COT and implement it into CRP, how long would we begin to see changes in those dynamic soil properties? And if we're interested in, let's say, retiring the land and planting it back into native grasses, how long will it take to see those changes in those dynamic soil properties? So we have approximately 10 DSP studies that we completed across the U.S. We completed two in 2015, and we have some more lined up for 2016. We're currently developing a protocol to use process-based soil models, you know, to answer those questions because we're using space for time and we're not doing long-term monitoring or sampling. So once we go out there one time, that's the only time we take the sample. And so we really need the use of process-based models to answer questions about how long it would take and how will those soil changes impact future management options. And that concludes my presentation. So for each one, we have three locations, and within each location, we collect one central pedon, and then four, well, for these, there are four satellite pedons. So the central one, we sample to at least 150, and the other ones are just to 50. And so that's aggregated to produce the data set. Oh, for these, in order to be a part of a DSP, like I don't have all the cultural information with me at this off the top of my head, but in order for us to select it as a site, we have to have it has to be in that current rotation for at least 15 years, and so that's how we know that it's gotten to at least some level of a reference or a state of that level, so that way we can actually say something about it. We have. Some projects, Minnesota, for example, the governor put in place a retirement program where farmers could retire their land. And that program has been going on for 15 years. And we're seeing large differences between dynamic properties in the retired land in comparison to cotton under ridge and strip and conventional tillage. And doing space for time studies, we're then allowed to say, okay, this retired land used to be corn conventional tillage. We know that it took 15 years for it for those properties to get to where they are, and we are able to compare that to the conventional tillage system.
Is there any questions here?
Yeah. Hey. So we have a group at the center who because the idea is to link it back to soil survey. And so they are looking at that, looking at different ways to evaluate the data, looking at ways to make comparisons to what we already know. And so that is part of... when you're using something like a rangeland or some type, you know, grassland as that reference site, I mean, of course, you're going to see, marked differences in something like, carbon. But the question then becomes, how long does it take once you maybe decide if you want to convert one management to another?